Now, all of the above quotations from Mrs. Eddy tie in together in one harmonious whole with her teaching regarding the mental nature of matter. Matter, we have learned, or should have learned, is but the objective state of our own material consciousness. What you and I see, feel, taste, smell, and hear is objectified consciousness. And that objectified consciousness is strictly and distinctly individual. It makes no difference how many people may see the same thing. It makes no difference how many people, for instance, may see this table at which I am sitting. As far as you are individually concerned, this table is the objectified state of your own individual consciousness. The only place this table exists, as far as you are concerned, is in your own consciousness. So you are not concerned as to what may be objectified in my consciousness, nor are you concerned as to what might be termed the objectified manifestation of universal thought or consciousness. In its last analysis, existence in all of its phases or varied manifestations is individual. In Retrospection and Introspection, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, "The lie, that is matter, was and is collective as well as individual." Close quote. By that, she means that no matter what collective thinking may accomplish in the line of objectified error or matter, it can have no bearing on individual existence until individual consciousness has accepted into thought the evidence of this collective or universal thinking. And then existence, or the consciousness of universal or collective thought, becomes strictly individual and loses its universal aspect. So in this last analysis, whatever you and I behold in our universe, whatever you and I see, feel, taste, smell, and hear, is decidedly the objectified state of our own thinking. And therein only, does salvation become individual. As I have explained before, if Jesus' so-called material existence or world had been the objectified manifestation of universal thought or collective thinking, Jesus never could have accomplished his ascension until every individual on earth had ceased thinking materially, and the universal consciousness had become strictly and wholly spiritual. It was because the body and the material world of Jesus existed only in his individual consciousness and was not dependent on the thinking of others that Jesus was enabled to overcome the world and his body at the moment of his ascension, rather than being compelled to wait on the demonstration of others before he could enter heaven. The demonstration of Jesus at the time of his ascension proved for all time that existence is strictly individual, and that the thinking of others has nothing to do with your and my individual worlds or with our demonstration over matter. You and I live in our own individual worlds, and these worlds are of our own creating. There are just as many worlds as there are people. Your material world is but the objectified manifestation of your own consciousness, and my material world is but the objective manifestation of my own consciousness. Therefore, our bodies, our worlds, everything is individual. Now, how does all this tie in with an explanation of the experience of death? Why, in this way. Material existence being strictly individual and the objectified manifestation of individual consciousness, mortals can never, as Mrs. Eddy tells us so definitely, become unconscious of matter until thought is spiritualized. In the quotation above from Miscellaneous Writings, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, "Science and health clearly states that spiritualization of thought is not attained by the death of the body, but by a conscious union with God." Close quote. Therefore, if one's body is the objectified manifestation of his own state of consciousness, and if death does not change that consciousness, it must be perfectly obvious that we do not lose our concept of material body by passing through death. Body, material body, occupies space only because of the human consciousness of matter. In science, there is no place, space, distance, or location. Man exists in the infinitude of mind. Therefore, matter or body seems to fill space or exist in space only because of thought. At the moment of Jesus' ascension, his thought or consciousness became wholly spiritual. And when that wholly spiritual state of consciousness was accomplished, Jesus was without a material body, which seemed to take up space or exist in space or location. Space, place, and localization are objects or illusions of the carnal mind, just as is matter. Do away with the carnal in human consciousness, and you do away with body, matter, and place. Therefore, materially speaking, you and I consume space or fill place only in our individual consciousness. As matter is an individual concept, there are, as I said, just as many tables here as there are human minds to conceive it. Each of you holds this table in consciousness as a distinctly individual concept of individual consciousness. The same may be said of the human body. Your concept of your body is individual. My concept of your body exists only in my individual consciousness. Therefore, when a so-called body is buried, all that is placed in the ground is the concept of body which the individuals who have been left behind hold in consciousness. And the concept of body held by those who think they bury the body is not the same concept of body as that held by the individual who is thought to be dead. To repeat Mrs. Eddy's quotation from Science and Health, quote, "Mortals waken from the dream of death with bodies unseen by those who think that they bury the body." Close quote. Now, the reason that the body with which mortals awaken after death is unseen by those who think that they bury the body is that those who bury the body think that the person who they are burying has died. Whereas, as a matter of metaphysical fact, the person whom they think has died has awakened from his dream of death with exactly the same material body he had before, because his body exists in his consciousness only, and death has done nothing to his consciousness. In fact, if one accepts the belief of death, he has made that a part of his human consciousness. In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes, quote, "That life, divine life, is not contingent on bodily conditions is proved when we learn that life, human life, and man, mortal man, survive this body. Neither evil, disease, nor death can be spiritual, and the material belief in them disappears in the ratio of one's spiritual growth. Close quote. Quoting again from miscellaneous writings, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, "After the momentary belief of dying passes from mortal mind, this mind is still in a conscious state of existence, and the individual has but passed through a moment of extreme fear to awaken with thoughts and being as material as before." Close quote. Now, if one awakens after death with thoughts and being as material as before death, and if matter and body are the objectified manifestations of individual thought, can there be any other conclusion but that after the experience of death, we are bound to have as our objectified existence the same surroundings as before? If the object of my consciousness before death includes a material home, material surroundings, material furniture, etc., and the only place these objects exist is in consciousness, could I possibly be conscious after death of any other house, any other furniture, or any other surroundings? If you will follow your metaphysical reasoning right through from the explanation of matter in the experience of death, you will never become confused as to this explanation of the experience after death, and you will never be tempted to believe that Mrs. Eddy's explanation of death and its aftermath has anything in common with the belief of spiritualism. In fact, the teachings of Christian Science as to death are not only the exact opposite of the teachings of spiritualism, but they reveal the utter impossibility of spiritualism and all it stands for. The reason we are not conscious of those who have been left behind after the experience of death, and the reason that those who have been left behind are not conscious of our material and bodily presence, is explained very clearly by Mrs. Eddy in the quotation from her article on life as follows. Quote, "No change has been wrought when we say, 'My friend has just died.' That friend is saying, in the full consciousness of existence, material existence, and with the same surroundings, material surroundings, 'I never died. It was but a dream I had. For life is going on with me the same as before. I am not spirit, yet I am as much flesh and bones as I ever was. The only change to me is I cannot communicate with my friends. And why? Because they do not understand me now. They call me spirit, but I am not. They say I died, but I did not. They do not know what I am, where I am, or what I am pursuing. I shall not be spirit until I lose all limits. They have lost their evidence of me through their personal senses because they have said I changed, I died. Their mistaken views of life have parted us. Their belief that life ended with me or took upon itself a new form has prevented their understanding the reality of my present existence. Hence our separation through these opposite beliefs and our opposite conditions as a result thereof. Further communication between us is impossible until their belief changes through the footsteps that mine has done and becomes like mine. This change will be named death, but that is their belief of it, not ours, who have rent the veil that hides the mystery of a moment. Close quote. Quite naturally, then, inasmuch as death does not change material existence in any way after the experience called death, we shall most certainly be able to recognize and communicate materially, just as we do now with each other, with those friends who have gone before. There is no change materially simply through the experience of death, and Mrs. Eddy has explained very clearly in the above quotations the mental nature of the belief of separation between those who have gone and those who have been left behind. When the barrier of mental separation is broken through the experience of death, we shall find ourselves on material speaking terms and terms of recognition with those who have gone before just as naturally and materially as here. The reason I say that when the mental barrier of separation is broken through the experience of death, there will be a union with those who have gone before, is that that is the only way we will be able, in our present state of advancement, to accomplish the union with the departed. If it were possible for you and me to make the demonstration over matter and body that Jesus made at the time of his ascension, we would have avoided the experience of death and would have become so spiritual and free from materiality that we could not recognize those who had gone before, because our spirituality would have taken us beyond their material state of consciousness. In other words, through spiritual growth, we would be so far in advance of those who had accepted the argument of death in matter that we would not be able to recognize them, nor they us. One student asks in this connection, quote, "In passing through the belief of death, are mortals ever conscious of a grave? Must they demonstrate over the belief of grave?" Close quote. No. My understanding is that when one passes on, one awakens in exactly the same location, position, and with the same material surroundings and accompaniments that he is conscious of at the moment of death. In fact, on one occasion, Mrs. Eddy, in explaining the experience of death to one of her students, said that if she and the student were sitting in chairs side by side and conversing, and someone should shoot an arrow into her heart, there would be a moment of intense fear on her part, after which she would awaken in the same chair in which she was sitting at the time the arrow was shot, but there would be no one in the other chair to converse with, because the other person would be holding the thought that she had passed on, and that thought would make the separation. You see, matter is but a condition of thought. And if thought is changed about its own objectification, matter disappears in the consciousness of the one whose thought has been changed. In such an instance, in the explanation of the reason for the separation between the departed and those who have left behind, we find that the material evidence of carnal thinking calling itself matter may, in certain instances, be changed without spiritualization of thought. That is, if we believe that another has died and the body has been buried, we are not spiritualizing thought in any way, for we do not see the physical evidence of the one who has died. We simply have changed our thought about him. We have not spiritualized thought about him. He has assumed in our consciousness a different state of existence because of our change of thought. And that different state of existence is just as material in our consciousness as the former state of existence. The question above as to whether we are conscious of the grave after death was based upon the statement in Science and Health as follows, quote, "The lonely precincts of the tomb gave Jesus a refuge from his foes, a place in which to solve the great problem of being. Close quote. It must be remembered that everything Jesus did, all of the experiences he underwent in his brief career on earth, were for the guidance and elevation of mankind. Mrs. Eddy tells us that he could have avoided all of the experiences which he underwent. However, to become the way-shower and the Savior, Jesus had to go through experiences which would prove to mortals the truth of what he had been teaching. He could have avoided the experience on the cross, but if it were not for that experience and what followed, there would be no Christianity. He could have avoided the tomb, but to bring the lesson of life home to mankind, Jesus had to undergo the experience of the tomb. Men would not have understood if he had done otherwise. Then again, it is more than likely that the experience of Jesus on the cross did not deprive him of his conscious state of existence. It is not possible to compare the experience of Jesus with those of mortals, because Jesus went through what he did merely as an example to us. At the time of the crucifixion, and even some time before that, Jesus was so close to the borderline between matter and spirit that there is a marked blending which puts some of his experiences beyond the realm of the human. When Jesus raised Lazarus from the tomb, Jesus had to effect Lazarus' reappearance in a manner that would be understandable to those who were there. Jesus had to effect Lazarus' reappearance in a body which his friends thought that they had buried. Otherwise, there would have been no lesson. Matter is but the objective state of mortal mind, and those who buried Lazarus could not see him in any state or body but that in which they buried him. Jesus' reappearance to his disciples after his resurrection, with the spear thrusts in his side and the nail prints in his hands, was the only form in which the disciples could be convinced that it was the self-same Jesus. The disciples could only see what they held in consciousness, and as they buried Jesus with the bodily evidences of the crucifixion on him, they could not see him resurrected without those same evidences. Jesus did not have to appear to them with the spear thrusts in his side. It was the disciples' own consciousness of Jesus that united his reappearance with the spear thrusts. You and I see, feel, taste, smell, and hear only what we hold in consciousness. There are, naturally, a great many questions which come to thought in connection with this question of death, which can only be answered through experience, and so far I am not looking for that experience, so there are many questions which you might want answered in this regard, which I am not now capable of answering.